This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and it's still the Roaring Elephant Podcast. We've not actually been taken over by Bloop Industries, but here is my co-host, and there's only two of us here today. Hello, Jan.
Hey, Dave. Yes, co-host number three was unretrievable, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I mean, all those blockchains, you know, fell apart.
So sad.
So, yeah, hope you enjoyed the last episode. If you have any feedback or thoughts on it, you know, shoot us a mail, podcast@roaringelephant.org. But we move onwards, and without the support of Bloop Industries, unfortunately. But, you know.
Well, you talk about quality control, so.
This is true. Jan and I were exchanging a few messages early this morning, and he mentioned that we're doing, because we're doing the episode on QC, and my brain immediately went, wait, why are we talking about quality control? I don't remember that being on our topic list. And then I started thinking about the little stickers that people put on things to say that they've checked them, the little, like, oval stickers with QC and like some initials and like a tick or whatever.
Control and then, person number 13, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely number 13. And then half a second after my brain had gone through all of that, it then went, oh, he actually means quantum computing, doesn't he? And then it all made sense. So yeah, we are here to, I was going to say begin, but we've had a couple of episodes on various elements of quantum computing. But we're going to go a little bit deeper into this interesting, varied, and certainly from my side, not particularly well understood world. So we have our resident expert. For certain values of expert, Jan. So, Jan, do you want to ease our audience into this topic?
Yes, just to look back at the previous episodes that we did. We labeled them debunking quantum computer because those were not talking about the actual quantum computing themselves, but more about how big companies are doing the marketing around quantum computing, and that it's not exactly all as rosy, perfect, fantastic, happening now as it might be in reality. But for the next couple of episodes, we're going to do a little series here, probably because it's way too much to unpack to do it in one episode. We'll just see how long this can take us forward, and we'll sprinkle some other things in between to make to shake things up from time to time. But here, we're going to try to actually go a little bit deep on the actual facts, on the actual meaning, what's actually happening. And if you read something about quantum computing in the presses, hopefully after listening to a little series here, everybody should have a bit more of an idea to make up for themselves if this is, yes, truthful or hyperbole or somewhere in between. That's kind of the aim for me here. Now, you did kind of say something about experts. I'm definitely an expert. I am studying this stuff. I've mentioned this before when we talked about adult education, thing we used. I am doing a master in physics at the moment, primarily driven by my wish to understand more about quantum computing, because I was in the same problem where all of this stuff comes in the news and I have no idea. Sounds great. Do we have quantum coffee next week?
Yeah, definitely.
Probably not. But that being said, I'm doing my master in part-time, so I'm doing 2 years for every year, and now I'm halfway the second year, so I'm definitely not a expert at all, but I have been
You are our resident expert in terms of, like, the two of us on the podcast, put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing with pre-sales, right? As a solution architect, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You have to be the smartest person, as long as you're the smartest person in the room. So as long as you control the audience.
You only need to be one step ahead. You know, yeah. That's all it takes. But I already have a question for you. How long has quantum computing, like, been around? I'm guessing that it started off with a theory that's probably existed for a long time, but when did it go from, do you know much about the history of it? Like, when did it go from someone somewhere thinking that this might be a thing to someone actually practically supercooling things and observing things and like having a quote-unquote quantum computer How long is it? This, how long has this actually been around?
Well, this is actually the prime example of superposition of questions, because there are so many different ways I can answer this one, because it all depends on what you mean with quantum computing. Because if you mean quantum computing is computing based on quantum principles, then my phone is a quantum computer. Your PC is a quantum computer. Because these things use traditional chips using semiconductors. And semiconductors, all those transistors and diodes, work because quantum technological, quantum mechanical principles.
Right.
So, to be fair, Babbage, I guess, no, he didn't have transistors and stuff like that. But this thing, these things have been around for a long time. Now, if you really talk about quantum mechanics, quantum computer, quantum mechanics specifically, the theory behind it, that kind of started, start of the last century, 1900s, 1910, 1920. But the real, the first ones that talked about this were Einstein and Niels Bohr, sort of around the Second World War era, let's say. That's when the things actually started being theorized to a point that it could put on paper, and the first mathematical formulas appeared. And the main reason that these things happened was because of light. Because there's, everybody went, has gone to school knows about the particle versus wave duality of light. Because sometimes light behaves as a particle, and sometimes it behaves as a wave. And the only way to explain that is through quantum computing, quantum mechanics. Sorry, not quantum computing, quantum mechanics, because that's basically where it comes from. And by the way, do you know where the word quantum comes from?
I do not.
Well, it comes from the fact that an electron can only have certain exact levels of energy. It's like the difference between a normal thermometer and a non-thermometer with a little mercury bar going up across all the range. So every subset is visible there. A digital thermometer only has degrees or maybe tens of degrees, but it jumps from 10.1 to 10.2. There is nothing between those two. And that's a quantized scale. Electrons also, well, I must say bound electrons, because free electrons can have totally analogous, complete ranges of energies. But when they're spinning around an atom, around a nucleus, they can only have certain levels of energies, and those are quantums. That's where the whole thing comes from. And the whole quantum mechanics is actually coming from the fact of these quantums of energy. And if you want to move an electron from a very close orbit to somewhat further orbit, well, there's an exact space where that orbit needs to be, because there is no intermediate quantum energy levels where the electron can be. So it has to jump that quantum package, which also means that you need to add a certain quantum of energy to make that electron jump.
Like spoiler slash triggering alert for our audience. If the word quantum makes you twitch or something, maybe skip the next 10 episodes. Like, there's going to be lots of mentions of the word quantum. But maybe this is your immersion therapy. So maybe you'll learn to love it by the end of the next couple of episodes.
That's it. We need to start respecting our quantum overlords right now.
Exactly.
Because that's basically what's going to happen from.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's where all the theory came from. The actual quantum hardware, there's not a really fixed moment. I mean, there's been some releases by IBM who had their first qubit and things like that. But in academia, this has been going on since then up until now. And I think D-Wave was the first one that actually released a quantum chip that was usable. And I would have to look this up, but I would think that was in the late 90s, early 2000s. That's kind of where my intuition says it came.
So really the theory was started to get properly refined around like the 1930s, 1940s, but it wasn't until kind of, yeah, maybe late 80s, 90s, 2000s, that the actual proof, because I think, I mean, you know better than I do, but like, depending on your definition of whether this is proven or not, or what parts of it are proven, but let's just say hardware actually existing, doing, air quotes here, quantum-y things, is actually a relatively...
computing using quantum processes, let's call it that.
Like, it's a relatively, despite the fact that the theory's been around for a very long time, the hardware itself is actually still relatively recent development.
Yes, and one of the reasons, and we're kind of, I had a whole plan set up, but that doesn't matter. One of the reasons it took so long is it had to do with superconducting. Because you probably heard from our previous episodes that one of the problems with quantum qubits is the how much error proneness they have, how they quickly lose their states, any kind of nudge and the system falls apart. So we needed superconductors, which actually, a superconductor is a metal that doesn't lose any energy at all when electricity goes through it. And how that works is because energy lattices, ion lattices, big mechanical stuff, basically the electron gas cloud in the metal has less obstacles and can flow very fast and very predictably because it doesn't have obstacles, no speed bumps that kind of break things. Now, superconducting typically works at 0 degrees Kelvin. And that's the absolute zero. You can never get that, but I was actually surprised how cold we can get stuff. I mean, we can get cold to 1 × 10⁻⁵ Kelvin, for example. So that's serious cold, but very hard to maintain, obviously. And the original superconducting materials only worked at those temperatures. Yeah. Over the years, since then, we have gotten superconductors that actually superconduct at higher temperatures. And I think the highest one we got was around 70 or 80 Kelvin now. Still cold. We're talking minus 200-ish Celsius or something like that. But it's very exponential, right? I mean, going from 0 to minus 10 degrees is easy to do. To minus 20, easy. To minus 100, oh, that's a lot of work. To minus 200, that's a lot more work. So it's a lot harder to get those last minutes out. But getting higher temperature superconductors was one of the things that made things possible, because more margin of error. The problem is that those higher temperature superconductors are very brittle. They're oxides and they can't really be used. So, but there's a lot of research happening at the moment to get what's called the ideal room temperature superconductor.
Yeah.
When we have that, that's going to be a huge breakthrough. We're definitely not there yet at all. But it is something that had to happen first, because that meant that the whole refrigeration apparatus around these quantum computers could become more practically feasible outside of a lab environment. And that's basically where the whole hardware thing came from. And it's only in the last couple of decades, honestly, that the chips themselves have gotten enough attention, because the things you need around it have gotten to a point where that becomes no longer experimental, but not exactly factory ready. But just if you want one now, a quantum computer, you can just order one and it can deliver it and be installed. So
So, I mean, there are a couple of sort of holy grails in this isn't all strictly quantum computing, I guess, but like there are a couple of holy grails in the scientific industry. One of them is cold fusion.
Yes, 20 years.
Another one is room temperature semiconductor. Room temperature superconductors. I'm trying to think what other.
The biggest mystery of them all. What is gravity? We know how it works. We can predict how it works. Nobody knows why it works. And the Higgs boson was a big step towards it. But we still don't really know what it is. We know what magnetism is. We can really explain exactly how magnetism works. We know how nuclear bonding works and all that stuff. But gravity? That's still a, I guess it works.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, people often forget, because that's Newton, right? That's like in 1700, apple falling
as you
from
tree. Yeah, we know how it works, but we don't know why. Interesting. Okay. So we're going to talk about one of the three holy grails of the scientific world. Yeah.
I think on the next episodes, we're going to talk about the different types of quantum chips that exist at the moment. And not all of them are actually based on superconducting materials.
Ooh, well, I think we should probably save that thought for
the next
episode.
We need a lot of stuff to do before we can get to that stuff.
Yeah, indeed. But this has been, I was a little bit trepidatious about this episode, because this is definitely something, you know, a long way out of my comfort zone and very deep into Jan's comfort zone. Fanar. This has been very interesting. So hopefully it's been interesting.
This is also why I want to do this, because I think I'm starting to understand this stuff. And the best way to know if you understand something is, can you explain it to somebody? So having somebody who is, well, I'm going to give you a compliment, semi-intelligent. It allows to have a discussion, and I'm hoping for, again, we're doing, I personally am doing this podcast to learn stuff, not to show people how smart I am, but to learn stuff, and some have helping me a lot in the past. I'm kind of hoping that this is also going to help me again to internalize these concepts for myself, and hopefully other people can benefit.
Yeah. Indeed.
Now, one thing I do want to mention before we go any further is just one last thing about why it's all the rage now. And that's obviously to do with what we talked earlier about the stock price. But there is some competition happening as well, because Microsoft has been very pro-quantum with their Majoranas and everything. And actually, Satya Nadella had a speech in January saying that practical quantum computing is around the corner. And for people who are not looking at YouTube, I am doing air quotes here, which work very well on spoken medium.
Yeah, great podcasting.
But I mean, there were two air quotes there, because practical quantum computing, what is that? I have built a quantum computer and I can use it to kill a fly. That's practical quantum computing. Probably not what he meant. And around the corner also, yeah, that could be next year, but in scientific terms, in galactic terms, that's in the next 2 billion years. In scientific terms, that's typically like cold fusion in 20 years, so that's also something. But it was very noticeable, I found, it was at the time, NVIDIA had their own conference happening, and Mr. Juan, what's he called again, Jensen, actually said that that was wrong and practical quantum computing is far, far, far away. Now, but at that time, I thought it was, nope, okay, cool. Opposing views, always good. It makes discussion happening. And I was kind of preparing this episode to talk about that a bit more. Unfortunately, in March, after Mr. Jensen saw that his what he said tanked his stock price a little bit, he said he was wrong and quantum is happening. And now, if you look at the press releases from NVIDIA, they are now also building their own quantum simulation environments based on their NVIDIA accelerators and so on. So again, a lot of, disinformation perhaps. But I was originally surprised, because a lot of the quantum computing happening now is on simulation. And one of the more practical ways of doing it, the ones that are the most mature, let's say, are particularly good for machine learning. Obviously, this means, I think, that NVIDIA saw quantum computing as a big competitor, because it's doing machine learning model training just like their NVIDIA cards do. The fact that he rolled that back gives me hope, because they wouldn't see it as a threat if it wasn't actually, air quotes again, around the corner.
Maybe. But also, counterpoint, maybe he just said that to reboost the stock prices back up again, to get back in the game, even if he doesn't believe it.
Why? Like, why do you have to take away the little bit of hope I have?
I know, just because that seems to be my role here. actually, normally it's your role, to be fair. We're just role reversing for this particular podcast. But no, yeah, I mean,
just wanted to wrap
maybe
up this episode with saying that even though we're talking about very theoretical things that maybe started a century ago and maybe won't materialize in another century, it is stuff that is happening right now, and it's actually affecting our real lives, because LED lights wouldn't exist without quantum mechanics. Mm-hmm. And with that enlightening final point, unless you have anything else.
Nothing else from me.
Now that is all we have for this first, as I titled it, a gentle intro into the subtopic of quantum computing. You can support this quantum podcast by becoming a quantum patron. Every quantum contribution does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, hit notification bells, and do all kinds of YouTube stuff there. You can go to our website at www.roaringelf.org. There's links to the Patreon page, YouTube page, more information, podcast, and you can send email to podcast@roaringelf.org. We're planning on putting a bit of time and effort in this whole quantum stuff, so let us know if you like it, if there's certain questions you want us to broach or something like that. Happy to mold whatever we're doing to make it better for you. That being said, until next time, my name is Schrodinger's Cat, Jon.
And my name is Qubit Dave.
And we look forward to Quantum talking to you again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.